The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you just joined me, I've been discussing the idea that it takes 20% of the population to overthrow a law or a rule, which equates to around 11 million people in the UK. Now, I reckon around 20% of the adult population in the UK refuse to take the government-backed poison. So would it be feasible to get this many people to unite under one idea? I also asked if estimates for the number of transgender people in England and Wales that have been produced by the Office for National Statistics are accurate. And surprise, surprise, it turns out that the true number is very likely a fraction of what is being published by the ONS. Well, according to Michael Biggs, anyway, who's an associate professor at the University of Oxford. My guests in the last hour were entrepreneur and business consultant Lyndon Wood and writer and social commentator Sarah Newland. If you missed the first hour and you want to watch back, it'll be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button where you'll be able to watch or listen back to all of my previous shows. Right, so I've got a great second hour of the show coming up. First up, I'll be speaking with journalist Taylor Hudak about US interference in European elections and the hypocrisy this represents, given the number of US politicians who constantly bang on about how this is such a crime when they say it's happening to the US. I'll also be discussing the fact that the European Parliament has given the green light for the unelected and unaccountable EU Commission to control the media through a new European Board for Media Services. Then in the second part of this hour, I'll be welcoming back one of my favourite hosts on TNT, the wonderful Kate Shemarani. Now, I quite often give Kate a call, particularly if I've got questions about the NHS, which she calls the National Homicide Service. And knowing Kate would be on the show today, I called her this morning for a chat. And I have to say that when I get off the phone with Kate, I'm quite often bamboozled after our discussion. Not because I think Kate is wrong, because I know that's not the case. You know, we've had many discussions and actually a lot of the things she said have proved to be quite true. No, the reason I'm frequently left bamboozled is because she usually is so far away from the accepted narrative, even within our community of questioning mind, that she ends up talking about things that I've got no idea about whether they're true or not, but things that I know a lot of people do believe are true. This morning's conversation on the phone was about people getting sick since 2021, which I and many others, including lots of world-leading scientists and doctors, have been suggesting is down to the jabs. Now, the question that Kate posed to me this morning is what else happened since 2021 that could make people sick? Now, she said, while all of us were on lockdown, engineers up and down the country were quietly installing 5G towers and adding 5G transmitters to street lampposts while they were updating streetlights to LED technology. Now, what Kate is saying about 5G tech being installed is correct. That's absolutely correct. That's what happened during the lockdowns. They did do that. But whether the radiation from these technologies is actually contributing to the sickness in the country, to people getting cancers, I'm not quite sure. And that's not because I don't believe it. It's because I just don't know the data. And there's only so many conspiracies that you can delve into. But potentially, it could be a contributory factor in the rising number of young people getting ill. We hear there's an extra 700,000 people being signed off of work due to long-term sickness. Is this a contributory factor? If I'm honest, I don't know, like I said. And I hate the fact, I really hate it, that there are so many things going on that are damaging people's health. Too many to be informed on all of them about. We've got the radiation from an ever-increasing number of devices that emit radiation, whether that's smartphones, Wi-Fi, all the other gadgets, and then, of course, the actual transmitters, the 5G towers and those transmitters that they are putting in streetlights. We've got ultra-processed foods, which I've heard this week now make up to 80% of a lot of people's diets in the UK. We've apparently got planes spraying chemicals into the air and all of the other things that on the face of it seem very plausible. And if you are informed about all of these conspiracies that could be possible, what the hell are you supposed to do about them? I mean, that's the other problem here, because all of it, you know, if I was to sign up to all of it, what makes me want to do is run away and hide, which is not possible even if you wanted to, if they're spraying chemicals into the air from planes. And maybe much of this is just part of a big psyop anyway to make us all feel helpless. Who knows? So, yes, I'm always on my guard when I speak to Kate. And I will say this, she is totally correct about the government having targets for all of the people it wants to put on end-of-life care pathways. I remember when she first told me about that, I was very, very sceptical. But it's something that the government publishes. They published it in a report in 2012. And since Kate told me that, I've actually had Professor Sam Ahmedze, who's a world-leading expert on this. He actually chaired the NICE group that wrote some of these protocols. He's confirmed that hospitals actually have cash incentives to try and hit these targets in terms of putting people on these drugs like midazolam and these end-of-care pathways. So I always listen to what Kate's got to say, but with a guard up. But anyway, she's going to be with us in the second part of this hour, so I'm sure the conversation will be wild as it normally is. If you want to get in touch with me, email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio TNT.
Right, before we go to our first guest, we're going to go over to Gemma Cooper, our UK news correspondent, for today's breaking news.
Thank you very much, James. Well, Downing Street has confirmed in the last hour or so that the first Rwanda flights have been booked, and that's just hours after the Rwanda bill, which was passed on Monday, received royal assent and became law in the House of Lords. The initial cohort, which will be put on the first flight, has been identified, Downing Street have said, but they didn't give any further details on the actual flight arrangements, the flight company that will be taking the asylum seekers, or the airfield of which they'd be taking off from. But that's breaking news in the last hour or so. Also today, the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, he has said that France and Germany should now match defence spending. This comes after the huge announcement about how 2.5% of our GDP will now be spent on defence up until the year 2030. That was earlier in the week, $75 billion in total. Jeremy Hunt is saying that other European NATO countries must now match that benchmark. We must all obviously stand together against the ever-increasing threat from Russia. That rhetoric that's been announced for months now, imminent preparation for some kind of global conflict, it seems there. The BBC has come under fire also from 10 Downing Street and the Prime Minister today. It's been criticised for spending a huge chunk of license fee payers' money on the US drama Suits, starring Meghan Markle. The BBC wouldn't disclose how much money it spent on the series, which it intends to air later this year. But ITV boss earlier in the week, one of ITV's bosses, said that the BBC had outbid the rival channel ITV and it wasn't an appropriate use of licensed payers' money. The Prime Minister today is quoted as saying he's rather that licensed payers' money went on homegrown British talent and not overseas television series. And also, is the tide turning on internet shopping? One of the UK's biggest supermarkets, the second biggest supermarket, Sainsbury's, said that now nearly 100% of all shopping is done in store, 87%, and people are turning their backs on the surge in online shopping that we saw during the scamdemic years when they tried to force us all online. And we wonder if this is indicative of how people are now coming out of their homes back into high street stores. Will it be mirrored in other retail outlets, or is this just a one-off? But today they're saying 87% of shoppers are now in store, and the online sales are dwindling fast. That's from Sainsbury's today.
Yeah, it's not surprising it grew during the pandemic, wasn't it? Because it was particularly in Wales here, it was an awful experience going to the supermarket. They had a lot of the aisles cordoned off because they were non-essential goods, whatever that means. So it's not surprising now, because for a lot of people, you know, when I was in my last house, I had a very elderly gentleman lived next door to me, and I was good friends with him. And for them, him and his wife, that was one of the only times where they actually got out of the house. You know, they used to go to the supermarket three times a week. They'd walk around, meet people they knew there. It was one of the few occasions where they'd actually get out and get some exercise. So, and I quite like a bit of shopping, I must admit, Gemma, although my wife keeps on telling me off for going on a hungry stomach, because I come back with I spend about twice the budget on shopping. Anyway, moving on. These Rwanda flights, that's interesting that the government has already identified those it's going to put on these flights. I do wonder if that will make a difference, because, you know, when you look at the number of people going on the flights and the total number of people in the UK that have got asylum applications in, it's a bit of a numbers game, really. I've got no idea what the percentage is, but it's a little bit like a lottery. And I bet you the odds are not that great in winning a ticket on that flight. So if I was on the French coast and I was thinking of coming across, I quite fancy my odds at not winning that prize of going on a flight. I personally think, and I've talked about it in the last week, Gemma, that the best way of doing this, rather than picking people that are already here, because they are already here, is saying to them, right, the next 10 boats that come across, or whatever the figure, you are all going off to Rwanda. If you sent people across to the French coast to hand out leaflets in the camps there and make sure that people knew that the next morning, if they get on that boat, that they're going straight off to Rwanda, they might listen and actually not come across. I think that's the answer, not this, because, like I said, I think the odds of you actually being sent must be pretty low.
Well, what people are saying is that, you know, people might be selected to be part of the cohort. Then you'll get yourself a lawyer. You'll appeal the decision. You'll ask the government to justify why not somebody else. And it will be a tit for tat process. It won't be as simple, some are saying today, as just saying, right, you're one of the first cohort on the plane, off you go. People will say, well, no. What about my human rights? I don't think it should be me. I'm going to fight my case. And many human rights organizations, for example, Amnesty International, will back people. They don't want people to be sent to Rwanda. So you're quite right. The lottery of, like, will it happen? They might have identified the cohort. Literally hours after the bill received royal assent in the House of Lords and was passed as law, the government said, right, we got them, the plane's full, ready to take off. But no more details, not the size of the plane, not which airfield in the UK the plane will be leaving from, nothing. Just said, we know who's going, and they will be going late June, early July. But will they? You see, will they? It will be a lottery. Mm. And you know, one or two people appealing could hold up an entire flight, because you don't want empty seats on the first plane. So, yeah, that we don't scant detail, but very well timed. Very well timed, I thought.
Yeah, and I, you know, look, the reality is that the number of people in a whole year that we can potentially send to Rwanda based upon the current model is the number of people that might come across in 2 or 3 days across the channel in the summer if the weather's nice. You know, a few thousand, that's all we're talking about. So, you know, if, like I said, if I was on the French coast, I quite fancy my chances of not winning that fantastic prize of being sent off to Rwanda. So I'm not sure that this policy, based upon how it's currently constructed, is going to make any difference at all. But I guess the proof will be in the pudding this summer, once the sun comes out and those waters in the English Channel start to calm. I guess that'll be the litmus test, won't it, Gemma? Because if they keep on coming across, well, then it's failed. because they're not all going to be sent to Rwanda. Like I said, the numbers are going to be very small. So if we still see, because that's the whole point, this isn't about fixing the number of people we've got here. This is about a deterrent to stop people coming across. So it's a big summer for the Tories, I guess, and they're all going to be hoping that the weather isn't great, I guess, because I'm not so sure that we're going to see the numbers coming down. But anyway, I'm sure you and I, Gemma, will be reporting on that over the summer.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a story that's definitely not going to go away. And just in the small print of the agreement, just very quickly as we wrap this bit up, there is part of the agreement that says we will send asylum seekers to Rwanda. But in return, we will take some people that Rwanda can't cope with and coming back on return flights because accessing our mental health services, which Rwanda says it just can't provide. We will take some of Rwanda's most vulnerable. Now, they will be coming in on a legal basis, but it's a tit for tat arrangement, which I think a lot of people aren't aware of. I wasn't. David Curtin here on TNT drew me to that section of the agreement, which he's read in forensic detail. So there's a lot in there that doesn't add up, just doesn't add up. So we'll see where we go with this one. But apparently the plane is full and they know who's going on it. Well, let's see, shall we?
Yeah, let's see. We'll see, because this is one of those things is we will know. We will find out over the summer whether this policy makes any difference or not, which is quite rare, really. Because quite often, you know, you bring in a policy and then it gets buried and forgotten about over the years with all of the new policies and things that are happening and all the new news. Whereas this, I think we'll find out this summer. So, I'm sure we'll be talking about it then, Gemma. Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be speaking with US-Hungarian journalist Taylor Hudak. We're going to be talking about the European Union and the fact that apparently the US is interfering in elections in the EU. A bit of hypocrisy there from the US, given all of the shouting that we hear going on in the US about that. We're also going to be talking about this new media board that the EU has set up that's been voted through in the European Parliament that is going to control the media in Europe. So we're going to be talking all about that in just a moment, right here on TNT.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
You have to be very, very careful with pregnant women when giving them drugs, or women that are breastfeeding, because those drugs will be carried in the breast milk. So why are biological men being given drugs to produce milk, breast milk, that's being fed to the babies in the premature baby unit, SCABU? And they've actually said it's as good as women's milk. I don't see how that is possible, because those drugs that will stimulate the pituitary and everything else that this man is taking are going to be in that breast milk. What could possibly go wrong?
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Now I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay, lots to talk about regarding the European Union with my next guest, who is US-Hungarian journalist Taylor Hudak. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Taylor.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. Taylor, let's start off. I know that you've written recently about the hypocrisy of the US. We constantly hear how US politicians talking about interference in US elections. But I think you've written a piece, haven't you, about talking about interference of Hungarian elections by the US.
Well, I've been posting quite a bit about this topic on social media. That's, of course, because we do have elections coming up here in Europe, in Hungary in particular, in June. So it's definitely an issue that I'm trying to learn more about. I'm obviously originally from the United States, but I've been living in Budapest for the past 2 years now, going on 2.5 years. So I'm trying to understand the culture, the political situation as well, which is honestly quite interesting. It's a little bit difficult because there is somewhat of a language barrier. Hungarian is one of the most difficult languages in the world to learn, in fact, but I do what I can to understand the situation. And it was interesting that back in April of 2022, so during the previous election in which our current prime minister, Viktor Orban, ran against another gentleman, his name was Peter Markeze, and I actually may not be pronouncing that completely correctly, but the two of them ran against each other. Orban is with the Fidesz party, which is a conservative party, and then the other party in which the other gentleman was running with is a more left-wing party. And it turned out that, in fact, this candidate, the opposition candidate, Peter Markeze, was being funded by the United States. He received in total, I want to say it was around 6 billion Hungarian forint, and received 1.6 billion Hungarian forint from an NGO, a US-based NGO called Action for Democracy. And by the way, this is illegal in Hungary for candidates and political parties to receive foreign funding. And there was an investigation into this by the Hungarian police and the intelligence services here. But yes, it's very concerning that the previous candidate was being funded by the United States. And get this, this NGO or think tank, Action for Democracy, was established in February of 2022, just in time for the elections in April of 2022. So this is what happened during the previous election. And I'm very curious if this could be happening in this upcoming elections as well. But it's still something that I'll need to look into. But given that history, I think we should all be quite skeptical. And it's not good for the Hungarian people to have one of their leading candidates being funded by a foreign country. And that's exactly what happened. And it's not proper. And people should be upset about this. And I'm trying to raise more awareness of this because it's important to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it does make a mockery, doesn't it, of all of these politicians that are constantly jumping up and down saying about how Russia's interferes, China interferes with US elections. I mean, look, I think most of us in the know that read beyond the headlines know that the US via the CIA is involved in election rigging all around the world, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This has been well documented. It was documented here. It's happening in Hungary as well. And it was an effort to get Viktor Orban out of power, I think, during the previous election. And I think they're trying to do that again this time. And they will try to move the party more left-wing, more in favor also of the EU. Now, let me be clear, just because I am critical that the United States previously funded the opposition candidate does not mean that I think that the current government is without flaws or that I agree with every single thing that the Hungarian government stands for. Of course, you know, I have, you know, criticisms, and I'm still trying to, again, learn exactly more about this country and that sort of thing. So I just want to point that just because I'm critical doesn't mean that I'm endorsing the other candidate, but it is good that we do have somebody in power who is more adversarial towards the EU, because the EU establishment and structure is a CIA creation, and it is not benefiting people in Europe. And fortunately, Orban, to a degree, has been going against the EU, unlike other prime ministers in Europe. So I'm thankful for that, and I hope that continue.
Yeah, he certainly has, hasn't he? And I think he's irked the Europeans in the commission there because of his stance, along with Poland and other nations, on migration. And of course, I think there's going to be a big fight coming up because the EU Parliament has recently voted through this policy whereby all countries in the European Union are going to be forced, or they're going to try and force them, to take their fair share of migrants into Europe. How long have you been living in Hungary now, Taylor?
Yeah, so I've been here since late 2021, and then here on a more permanent basis in 2022. So about, 2 years.
And what is the mood like there? Do people in the country support? I'm assuming they do support Viktor Orban on the stance in Hungary that they don't want lots of migration.
Yeah, that is my sense. That is my sense. Now, I will be honest here and say that it is not something that I'm talking to the average person about too often. I think in Budapest, there probably is more dislike for Orban than, say, the rest of the country. This is the biggest city in Hungary, but I bet if you go to the more rural areas, people support Orban. And in the last election, I mean, he won by a huge margin. He won the election by a huge margin, despite the opposition candidate receiving billions in Hungarian forints. So I think that's very telling. I think there is some criticism of him in Budapest, though, probably particularly with younger people, because the idea of traditional values, younger people don't really embrace those ideas as much. That's kind of the direction that we're moving in.
And of course, a lot of them younger people have forgotten. Well, they haven't forgotten, actually, because they weren't there. But they won't have the memory that a lot of older people have got in the country of what it was like and under the USSR and communism. Mm-hmm. Because I think, one of the things I've heard from lots of people from Eastern Europe who've grown up there under communism is they've been very, very skeptical of what's been going on over the past few years. They when we had the lockdowns and the injections, they saw through that very, very early because they recognized a lot of the messaging, the lockstep, and a lot of those things were very, very similar to what they saw under communism. Now, Taylor, we're going to take a short break. Please stay on the line because I do want to talk about the European Parliament, which has just given the green light for the unaccountable and, of course, unelected EU Commission to control the media in Europe via a new EU board for media services. We'll talk about all of that after this short break right here on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Are you ready for some awesome news?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4!
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. 18 of Donald Trump's allies have been indicted by a grand jury in Arizona for legally challenging the results of the 2020 election. The bishop stabbed in last week's alleged terrorist attack in Sydney has weighed in on the censorship war brewing in Australia. And as protests erupt across America demanding an end to the war in Gaza, demonstrators have swarmed the residence of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Right, now, Taylor, tell us about this new board that's been set up to control the media in Europe. I mean, I was aware we've obviously got the Digital Services Act, which has come through in the past year. So I'd be interested to hear what this board is and how you think it will interact with this Digital Services Act.
Yes, this European Media Freedom Act or EMFA proposal, which has just been passed through the European Parliament, is complementary to and almost an extension of the Digital Services Act. But this proposal, this piece of legislation, is more so focused on the media itself. And it's actually an unprecedented piece of legislation. Essentially, what happened was is that back in September of 2022, the European Commission proposed this new law that was seeking to centralize the e-media sector into a single market that would be overseen by the Commission itself, again, an unelected, unaccountable body, as well as national regulatory authorities through the establishment of a new European Board for Media Services, which just sounds so Orwellian. And they are actually portraying this to the European people as if it's something that's going to liberate the media. However, more restrictions, more regulation never leads to more liberation by any means, but that's how it's being portrayed. It's actually quite unbelievable to watch. I just posted to my Telegram channel a few days ago this bizarre video put out by two members of the European Parliament promoting this European Media Freedom Act. Everybody should watch it. It is unbelievable. They're justifying censorship, justifying controlling the media. It's really terrible, but this is the direction we're going in. So they're establishing this European Board for Media Services. It's the first time ever that the entire EU media sector is going to be overseen through a central organization, and that being the board. And the board is not an independent body like it claims to be. It has a member of the commission that is involved in all of the activities of the board, and any of the procedures that are taken by the board have to be approved by and done with the supervision of the commission. It also places additional restrictions on the very large online platforms, or VLOPs, they call it, and establishes that these platforms, before a media entity is able to publish onto any of the platforms, that's, you know, Google, any Google services, YouTube, Rumble, TikTok, the big platforms, before a media organization can publish there, they have to enter into an agreement with the very large online platforms and declare that they are a media service provider, as it is defined, that they are editorially independent from the member states. Yet the great irony here is that they're going to be completely dependent on this European Board for Media Services and the Commission. And then they also have to declare in this particular agreement that they are subjected to the regulatory requirements and they have some form of self-regulation mechanism in place, and that they also have contact details of the national regulatory authority that is overseeing the media entity, just in case the media entity happens to, or media service provider, that's the phrase, the term that they use, just in case that media service provider were to violate any of the principles within this European Media Freedom Act that is being controlled and enforced, rather, by the European Board for Media Services. So again, more power to online platforms. That didn't work out well for us. I do not understand why they're continuing to do this. Well, I do understand the reason that they want to do this is to further censor the media, censor those who speak out against, let's say, harmful injections, who speak out against wars, all kinds of things that are considered to be anti-establishment. So this is a really scary direction that we are headed in. And I feel like it's, yeah, not something that many people are aware of.
It is scary, isn't it? And I've seen some of the reports that the commission is producing on trends in disinformation, as they call it. One of the things that they've been talking about a lot recently is on migration and hate speech regarding migration. Now, one of the countries they picked on was in Ireland. Now, my view is very, very different than that, because, you know, when you look at the small communities, rural communities in Ireland, and some of them small villages, and they've had hundreds and hundreds of migrants just placed in their community, which turns things upside down. I don't think them speaking out and pushing back against this is anything to do with hate. It's being done without their permission, without their consent in Ireland. And yet that is being interpreted as hate speech. We know that the commission has been asking social media companies to dial down a lot of the conversation around this. I mean, Taylor, to me, this does sound very, very much like USSR communism.
It absolutely does. That's what it is. And unfortunately, it's being portrayed to the public as I said, something that's going to liberate the media. It says that this is going to allow for free exchange of ideas. It's going to allow the media to thrive and be independent. But it's complete nonsense, because it will be totally controlled through this centralized structure, which has never happened before. The media and any laws having to do with any sort of regulation of the media was always left to the member states. And I also posted about this as well, that I think that the EU should be dismantled. It should not exist. It is not a force for good. And countries do better when they're speaking their own language, when they are on their own currencies, also not on the euro, but their own currencies, when they are sovereign and independent, centralizing. This centralizing structures do not do well, and it really allows a pathway for control and censorship, which is what we're seeing with this EU Media Freedom Act. And also we're seeing it in a number of other areas as well.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, Taylor, as you know, I'm fully aware, this should worry everybody. You know, if you're watching in the UK, this isn't just a European thing. So you can't just say, well, I don't live in the EU, so it doesn't matter. Because the point is that these social media companies, these online tech companies, they have to dance to the tune of the EU. Otherwise, they're going to be taken offline and potentially fined billions of pounds. And they can't have, or it's very, very difficult to have a different policy in each country. It just becomes too complicated. So what essentially happens, which is by design, is, you know, the European Union essentially are going to be censoring the information for the UK, for other countries around the world. It's doing the job of the globalist, essentially, isn't it?
It is, yes. And this does impact people outside the EU as well, because this prevents, so if you're a media service provider outside the EU, from my understanding at this time of this proposal, is that there will be some extra obstacles that the media service provider would have to go through to have their material be able to be viewed by people within the EU. And we're already seeing this with the banning of RT and other Russian media organizations. But I think it is quite possible that UK media service providers would not be able to have their work seen or read or listened to by people within the EU. So it absolutely does impact those within and outside the EU. And we're going to see, unfortunately, I think, more policies and laws like this in other countries. And we're already seeing it in Canada, the United States. I think the online safety bill in the UK is somewhat similar to this as well. So each country has their own censorship bill going through, and we need to talk about it and do the best that we can to stop it. But unfortunately, as I said, the parliament has decided to go ahead with this in the EU.
Yeah, and as history shows us, those who try and stop free speech and try and censor things, they're never the good guys. And that is, never. I think, the final message on this conversation. Taylor, listen, a great conversation there. Please do, when you get home, do come back on the Freeman Report. We can get you on video next time.
Yes, I would love that. Thank you very much. And for those who would like to follow me on social media, please join my Telegram channel at Taylor Hudak. It's Taylor Hudak Media. Thank you so much. And I look forward to our next discussion.
Thank you, Taylor Hudak. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Right, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to have TNT's very own Kate Shemarani. Always a lively discussion with Kate. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go.
I
didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Que color? Perfecto, amigo.
Gracias. Thank you.
What's wrong, amigo?
Donating to a pet's medical care is one of the many ways you can help families in your community. Pets and people belong together. Learn more at petsandpeopletogether.org.
You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, I told you in my introduction to expect a wild conversation now, but I'm absolutely delighted to welcome. She is one of my favourite hosts on TNT. She is the fabulous Kate Shemarani. Hello, Kate.
Hello, James. Lovely to be here again.
Yeah, no, I always love it when you come on. I did say in the introduction, though, quite often the conversations, I come away a bit bamboozled after speaking with you because you throw all this stuff at me and I'm like, I end up all confused, not knowing what. But a lot of the stuff you tell me, I later go on to learn, it's absolutely true. Like all of the targets that the government have published about the number of people they want to put on midazolam and these end of life care, you were absolutely bang on the money in terms of all that. So, Kate, let's start with the conversation we were having this morning, because I was talking about turbo cancers and the fact that I have Angus Dalglish and Dr. William Makis on the show talking about it. And you said to me, didn't you? You said, well, James, yes, I know they're kind of blaming that on the jabs. What else has changed since 2021? So tell us what else has changed.
Well, first of all, just to give a foundation, cancer was already one in two in the UK and in America, I believe. It wasn't one in two at the turn of the century. So you've seen an entire century of every toxin being belched out into our atmosphere, toxic foods, toxic water, toxic air. What has changed since 21? Well, you have the adding of 5G. And it doesn't matter what anybody says. How do they measure our brain waves? They measure that electricity across the brain. How do they measure our heart, the electricity across the heart? If one was to go back to Spanish flu, which we know was a lie, was again a vaccine, the radar had just been introduced and all of the radar operators got sick. We were living through a deadly pandemic. We're all going to die 6 foot apart in groups of six or be 6 foot under. The government's words, not mine. And yet we saw lots of workers from overseas who weren't English laying the 5G technologies when the rest of you, you're all, were accepting the term lockdown, a prison term, and remaining in your own homes. So now we have a generation, I believe they call them Generation Z. I call them our young, who should be, you know, if you look through the graveyards, these are the people that would be fighting wars. This is the generation, the next generation that we are supposed to hold wisdom and educate. They are accepting that they are going to get cancer. They don't fight against it, but they are using mobile phones in their pockets. And we're seeing an increase in, we're even seeing cancers of the appendix, which was quite rare. They're putting laptops and having cancers in the stomach. They're holding their mobile phones next to their heads. They're putting them down their bra straps when they go to the gym. So they're being bathed in EMF, and it actually does tell you in your mobile phone, your iPhone, because Steve Jobs never let his kids have one. If you go into general settings, legal and regulatory, RF exposure, it tells you about it. So there, we have schools with masses of EMF, with 5G posts on the top of the roofs, nurseries. We have them with it in their cars, Bluetooth, earpods.
Yeah. And Kate, you'll know as well, the 5G is one of those technologies which the bandwidth allows large amounts of data to be transmitted. This is why they want it, because they want the Internet of Things, you know, cars, self-driving cars, all of this. But in order to have that large amount of data, it can't travel through things that well, and it can't travel very far. So they've actually been putting, haven't they, the transmitters in light, in lampposts, when they've been changing the lights there to LED. That really worries me, because a lot of people, I mean, my old house, we had a lamp, a street lamp right outside my kids' bedroom. Lots of people in the UK will have that. How worried should we be, Kate?
Well, your MPs work for you. That's what you're paying, allegedly, your council tax for, but we know it goes to wars. You should be asking your MP and asking the council for proof that they have actually done a risk assessment on these, and are they insured? They're called street furniture, and you'll discover that they're not. They're not insured. And LED lights, of course, have been proven to make your blood sticky. Actually, the ULEZ cameras, which are all part of it as well, ULEZ Fusion Technology, Transport London have deployed. They've not carried out the mandatory environmental impact assessment. This is where you don't need to be worried. You need to be on your feet. And what you could do is say to your councils, I'm withholding my council tax for 30 days until you show me proof that these are indeed insured. You should be turning your Wi-Fi off at night. You shouldn't have all these extra things in your house. Lucky I don't have very good Wi-Fi, I have to hardwire. But you should be worried to the point of being on your feet and walking in authority, not just taking it and accepting it.
I mean, the thing I find really difficult with this, Kate, particularly being within the freedom movement, is there's so many things that, and I talked about this in the introduction, you know, there's the foods we eat. I mean, that's actually quite an easy one to solve, right? You just use whole foods and you cook real food instead of buying these ready-made meals. But, you know, we're told that there's chemicals being sprayed in the air around us by planes, loads of stuff for that on the internet. And now, you know, we've got 5G. There's lots of conspiracies around that. And I guess for a lot of people, it's really, really difficult to deal with because there's so many things. And the other thing with it all as well, particularly with 5G, is you can't see it. It's invisible. Can you? So like people, it's very, very...
It's the Prince of Air. It travels through air. We wrestle not with flesh and blood. We fighting principalities. Just going back, you said about the food. There is alleged there's going to be a meeting in Parliament where they're discussing stopping all imports of food. I believe we make about 16% of our food. The rest is imports. Prince Charles, King Charles, whatever you want to call him. I only have one King, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Creator, the living God. He said that he was going to make all food GMO now, and it doesn't need to state it on the packaging. GMO is very dangerous. Yeah. So it's about growing your food. It's about stepping out of their utopia.
Very, very good point, Kate. And I've actually had experts on this show. We've talked about this, scientists, because that law, which you're talking about there, it's the genetic modification and precision breeding bill. That's already passed. Quite shocking, really, that passed, because if you rewind back 10 years ago, what were the stories in the papers? The British public were absolutely adamant that they didn't want GM crops in the UK. And yet this bill passed really, really quietly just after all of the lockdowns and everything, which means now, like you said, that they can actually sell these products and they can genetically modify animals and crops and sell it. And they don't even need to put it on the label. That's already here, isn't it?
It is. But also, if you look at the gentleman that first came out with GMO, after first generation, 40% sterility in the second generation, 100% sterility in the third generation. If you Google Spermageddon, you'll see that your tadpoles are not going to be around for very long. So one, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't really care what anyone says about me. I'm not in any freedom movement. I am just somebody that goes through, I find the research, I read it. I've not been wrong so far on every single thing. And it doesn't bother me what people say about me, because ultimately I will leave this place. And God, when God decides, my children will be left to hopefully, but now we're seeing a generation that we outlive our children. We're outliving our children. And all the main cancer charities are saying it's going to be 100%, just to say, because I want to get it in. All of the so-called people that are speaking out now, oncologists, turbo cancers, these oncologists are the same ones who are going to get even richer, because oncology makes billions in revenue. It makes billions in profit. The same oncologists are going to be getting even richer. All of the vaccine manufacturers have already switched to oncology drugs because they knew. But the sad point is nobody is saying, what else can I do? They are accepting mustard gas, burn it, radiation, or cut it, surgery. They're not asking, and they're just accepting this. In my parents' generation, they would have questioned straight away, why is this increasing? But the generation that is here just now is being spoon-fed, Netflix, this thing to distract, that thing. Just accept it. Accept your daily poison that you're going to get it and you're going to do as you're told. This is the sad thing. No one is doing critical thinking.
Yeah. Now, Kate, like I said, some of the things people can control, well, some people can control. If you've got, you're lucky enough to have a garden or a space where you can grow your own food. I mean, I've actually got microgreens growing in my garage using LED lights. But if you're lucky enough to be able to do that, fantastic, right? But lots of people aren't. So, and you know, and how do we stop the planes flying in the skies, you know, spraying chemicals? Part of me wonders whether half of this is just one big psyop to make people feel helpless so that we're easily controlled. I mean, how do people deal with all this information? What can they do?
Well, first of all, throw your TV out. Get yourself a library like what you see behind me so it won't matter if the internet goes down. You've got it all in paper form. You don't need myself and James to tell you. The next thing is that you don't need to have a massive garden. You can have a balcony. You can have a plant pot next to your window and grow tomatoes. You are not an island. It takes a village to raise a child. It doesn't take a family. This is the problem. Communities have broken down. And I'm a big cat lover, so is the producer. And you know what? People always have had cats because the cats keep the rats down. So when you see the Amish community, and I've been very fortunate to stay with them, they don't let people stay. I stayed with them for 2 days. They work as a community, and they have a, they let all their kids go out into the English for 1 year when they turn 18, and they have a 98% return. So you have to find your communities with your people, and you will be fine.
And it's interesting that you bring up the Amish community because there's been a lot of studies on them, and rates of autism are virtually non-existent. Lots of things that is prevalent in the rest of society, they don't experience because they don't allow vaccinations. They don't allow a lot of the other things that people indulge in, like internet, like phones, smartphones and all this kind of thing.
They don't. They do have their own problems with their young today. There were some Amish kids killed having a go in a car. But what they do, they pray. They're very quiet and calm. It's the most beautiful, wonderful place to go and stay in their homes. But how they treat their young when their young are disobedient is quite interesting. They shun them. What they do is they don't allow that child or adolescent to eat with the rest of the family or the community. So they don't throw them out. They just shun them within the community. And because we are naturally born to seek others. And there are many studies done when you isolate, you will get disease. Why? Because we are electrical before we're chemical, before we're physical. So it's an emotion. And this is why the government is doing all this tactic on us, like the Red Army used, the 3Ds, disability, dependency, and dread. It's all, as you've already said, a psyop to bring you to perpetual state of anxiety so that you become but children dependent on a tyrannical government going over and above the powers that we the people bestowed upon them. If you do indeed believe in democracy, well, you shouldn't have a government. It should be small councils in villages and towns and elders.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you there, Kay. I mean, look, you know, I was talking with Lyndon Wood. He was my first guest on today, and we were talking because him and I met up on the tail end of the lockdowns, and it was pretty devastating at that point because everyone had just been locked in their homes. It all seemed very, very, you know, we were pessimistic about the future. But, you know, lots of things have changed since then. And although, you know, you've got to recognize that there's more threats, I think, on the horizon now from like the likes of the WHO, all of this climate change nonsense and everything else. But you can't deny that more people are waking up. Do you think we're winning this war, Kate?
Well, it depends if you engage in the war. What is the war? I was brought up, I was born in the 60s. And I remember a leaflet being delivered through our doors in the 70s saying we were in the event of a nuclear bomb, we were to all barricade ourselves.
I remember them.
Mattress.
Yeah.
So everybody was terrified. My mother was terrified. We were all going to die in a nuclear holocaust. But it was rubbish. And before that, you had the Suez Canal. You can go back all the way through history. You will have inflation. You will have governments that sleep around. You will have all of this, the fall of Rome. You know, the thing is, it's rinse and repeat. Are you going to engage in it? Are you going to go, bugger off, I'm not listening. I'd rather live in the savage reservation. Do you think that the people in the Amazon rainforest are doing PCRs and worrying about this garbage?
Exactly. Absolutely brilliant, as usual. Kate Shemarani, ladies and gentlemen. I totally agree with Kate. Throw your TV out, but make sure you don't stop watching TNT. That's the most important thing there. Kate, you need to come on more regularly. Thank you so much for joining me today, and please do come back.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. See me on Sunday on TNT, 10 yes. till 11 a.m. British Summer Time, 9 till 10 a.m. GMT, where we give you solutions.
Fantastic. And that's it from me today, right here on TNT.